Hello, and welcome to the Sound of Economics from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Zsolt Darvas, senior fellow at Bruegel, and today we are here for an installment of the Bruegel Backstage series, focusing on Japanese monetary policy outlook. Joining me today is Sayuri Shirai, who is a professor at Keio University, and previously she was the Bank of Japan policy board member between 2011 and 2016. We are going to talk about the Japanese monetary policy situation and inflation outlook and the major risks that we can face down the road. Now, if one thinks about Japan, the first idea that people have in mind may be the high-quality electronics or the car industry. But Japan is also usually portrayed in economic circles as a country facing lost decades, whereby economic growth is very slow and inflation is very, very low. In the past 15 years, I believe, inflation on average was very close to zero, even though the Bank of Japan has long been tried to implement various monetary policy measures to boost inflation. Now, since the appointment of President Kuroda to the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Japan has a new round of very expensive monetary policies in order to boost inflation. And my first question is, how successful, in your view, the Bank of Japan is in reaching its new inflation target?
First of all, this impact of Bank of Japan's massive and conventional monetary easing is mixed. In terms of raising inflation towards 2%, I have to admit it was not very successful. Because if you look at underlying inflation, excluding all food and energies, still only 0.2%. 5 year on average is just about 0.4%. So inflation was generated occasionally mainly because of commodity price, like oil price hike and yen's depreciation and higher import prices. But underlying inflation is very weak. But having said that, this monetary policy had a big impact on depreciation of Japanese yen and thereby increasing corporate profit, especially foreign profit converting to the Japanese yen. It expand as a result of yen's depreciation. And also Japanese stock prices are much higher than before. So in terms of, you know, depreciation and stock prices or real estate increase, there were positive impact. But in terms of inflation, the impact was very small. So that's why I'm saying the impact is mixed.
So is it a mission impossible in Japan to boost inflation? Or what's the reason of this very, very low underlying inflation in Japan?
So it's quite amazing to see that very little impact was generated on inflation, right? But when you look at the Bank of Japan's total financial asset as a percent of GDP now reached 100%, that's much higher than Federal Reserve and ECB. So there is no doubt that Bank of Japan did massive monetary easing. And then why we are not able to generate inflation? There are a couple of reasons. Number one, because also the nominal wage started to pick up under Abenomics because Prime Minister Abe tried to pressure the Japanese company to raise, wages because we have a declining population and demographics. We have serious labor shortage. So companies have a high profit. So they are able to pay higher wages. But over these 5 years, it's true that nominal wage started to pick up, but still much lower than 2000 level. And in terms of real wages, after excluding inflation, the real wages remain stagnant. So people do not feel that wages really picked up. And more importantly, in the future, people do not expect that inflation will pick up. This is one of the reasons why people are very cautious about spending. Another issue, we have an aging society now. 30% of population are now pensioners, people aged over 65 years old. So they do not get a growing income, right? So they count on a pension benefit. Therefore, they're very sensitive to inflation. So they are strongly resisting to the price hike. Another issue, this may be surprising to you. Now, Mr. Abe and Mr. Kuroda, Governor Kuroda, keep saying that Japan has a deflation mindset, but there was no such deflation mindset. When you look at household survey, they always say, actually, they feel inflation picked up all the time. Because I think because wages are so small, so, you know, all the statistics, CPI is showing that there is a deflation, but people's mind, they never felt that price was going down. So actually, people do not really feel that there was a deflation in the past. So that's another reason why people are strongly resisting to 2% inflation. There is very few public support in Japan about this 2% inflation.
And this is very interesting what you have said about the perception of people about inflation. And I have to say that it's also similar in the euro area and other countries. So when a survey is asked about people, what their perception about inflation, they tend to say higher, probably because they notice a few goods like milk or bread or whatever which we frequently purchase, and with the price of those goods increase, then they somehow extrapolate that increase to the all goods, even if, you know, prices of computers or cell phones or whatever are actually falling many, many, many years. But let me come back to the wage issue, because that should be a very fundamental determinant of price developments. So you say that wages don't really increase a bit, but don't really increase. But at the same time, we do see a technological development, which means that companies becoming more productive. And that must, you know, lead to higher profits. Now, if companies are more productive and they have higher profits, then they should be able to pay higher wages. So why don't, you know, and at the same time, you know, Japan has one of the lowest unemployment rate in the world. So again, probably there is no free labor anymore. So I'm a bit puzzled that even though these factors, low unemployment and technological development, wage growth doesn't really pick up.
Actually, a lot of foreign people feel very puzzled about this Japan situation. We have a serious labor shortage, corporate profit are reasonably high. Why they are not willing to pay higher wages? Yeah. I think corporate profit became higher since 2014. One of the reasons was because of foreign profit. Foreign profit earned in United States or Asia or Europe. Now, once those are converting into the Japanese yen, because of yen's depreciation, it's expanding when evaluated in Japanese yen. Okay. When you look at sales value, including export and domestic sales value, it's constant. So actually profit are generated not because of the increasing sales value. Yeah. So it's quite amazing that Japanese corporate sector get profit even though sluggish sales value, right? So where this come from? So number one, it come from foreign profit. And number two, it come from massive, cost cutting effort by the company. But having said that, Japan has a very high technology. It's true that some companies started to, apply like AI or IT technology. But when you look at whole economy, it's not very productive. Actually, labor productivity over these 5 years under Abenomics, unfortunately, the productivity growth is lower than previous 5 years. Employment picked up, but real GDP is not picking up that much. So labor productivity is not growing so much. So under this situation, corporate sector really feel that they are very unsure about this raising, especially base wage. So they try to increase wages through bonuses, just a temporary bonuses, not permanent income. This is what's happening. Another reason why in Japan wages are so low is because there's a shift from regular workers to non-regular workers. So now we have a labor shortage. So elderly people, pensioners, they also try to have non-regular workers, non-regular works. If you take a taxi in Japan, almost all of them are like near 68, 69. So pensions are so small, so they want to get, you know, additional income, right? And everybody can get job because of labor shortage and then cheap wage. And housewife, they try to supplement their income because husband income is so low. So wife take a part-time work. So this is what's happening. So this also contributes to the low wage.
What you just portrayed paints a very dark picture about the future. Because if labor productivity doesn't increase, while at the same time the labor force shrinks because of the declining population, then the medium and long-term growth, potential growth of the country must be very, very low. And that could raise major, major concerns about sustainability of many different issues. We can think about public finances, first of all, with one of the, perhaps the highest public debt as a share of GDP among advanced countries, but also public services. You know, I mean, if villages are basically people are die and depopulated, mm-hmm. or the school system or the healthcare system, I think this will cause major, major challenges if there are no robust economic growth in the long
term. Yes. Actually, Bank of Japan has an estimate about this potential economic growth right now, about 1%. Now, what contributing this potential economic growth? Not TFP. The total factor productivity and overall productivity growth contribution actually dropped since the global financial crisis. So right now, this increasing labor participation ratio from female housewife and pensioners, that contributing to the temporary increase in potential economic growth and also partly CapEx, capital expenditure. But you don't expect to see an increasing capital expenditure forever, right? So eventually, Japanese community have to find a way to raise total factor productivity. I think eventually we will really run out of people in next 5 years. All those elderly people really become over 75 years old, so they will retire. Then we'll have an extremely severe labor shortage, limited immigration flows. So that will lead to many companies to take more initiative to increase labor productivity. Then we'll have a massive corporate restructuring. But at this moment, a lot of corporate sector are not doing that. But eventually, I think this labor shortage will really force Japanese economy to take this greater step toward raising labor productivity.
Very interesting and major, major challenges ahead. Mm-hmm. Now let's continue with the public finance challenges, because as we just discussed, Japan has the highest rate of public debt as a share of GDP. But at the same time, due to the massive government purchases of the Bank of Japan, mm-hmm. the Bank of Japan becomes a more and dominant owner of government bonds. Now, how this can play out? I have to say that my major worry is that the Bank of Japan is basically trapped, because since it is probably the biggest owner now of government bonds, it will not just simply wind down its government bond holdings, because who would be the new market participants who would come in and purchase all of these bonds? So I see difficulty of how Bank of Japan would be able to exit its current very expensive monetary policies.
That's a very complicated issue. Actually, Bank of Japan already hold 50% of outstanding Japanese government bond. That's quite amazing, given that Japanese total debt is really big, including local and central government debt, as a percent of GDP, around 220%. So the Bank of Japan holds such amount is quite amazing. Yeah. So what's happening right now is, because in Japan, corporate bond and asset-backed security market were covered bond, we don't have it. It's very small. So basically, debt security market is completely dominated by Japanese government bond. So when we look at regional bank have a lot of retail deposit, but very little credit demand. So there's a gap between this huge retail deposit and how they allocate this money. So traditionally, they try to buy Japanese government bond to fill out. Another one, like life insurers, they also have a lot of long-term liability, but they have to buy Japanese government bond to have asset liability matching. So they definitely need Japanese government bond. So since the Japanese Bank of Japan hold 50% of outstanding bond, actually JGB market is in the scarcity. So Japanese government bond are sort of bubble. Prices are very expensive. So this is why Bank of Japan actually tacitly and quietly started to reduce amount of annual Japanese government bond purchases since 2016. Okay? So actually, on a public statement, they say, Bank of Japan say, we continue to buy 80 trillion yen Japanese government bond annually, but they are actually buying 40 trillion yen because of the scarcity. Okay. So at this moment, huge demand. That's why Bank of Japan find it relatively easy to have an extremely low 10-year yield, which is around 0%. Okay. So, but having said that, so what BOJ is going to do, eventually they have to complete tapering, right? They have to reduce this annual purchases to zero eventually. Then I think for a while, if the BOJ communicate well, because there is a still demand from insurers and regional bank, I'm sure they are willing to buy some of this Japanese government bond. But when we think about whether BOJ is able to get rid of all this huge holding, that's a bit difficult. I think market cannot observe all this BOJ's holding. Then, so depending on how BOJ communicate, this create a lot of, you know, anxiety. And then maybe supply will be higher. Supply of Japanese government bond will be relatively too much compared to demand, right? So this will be fine line. So it's very complicated. At the same time, you know, government, at this moment we have reasonable economic growth. So that generated some tax revenue. So in terms of fiscal deficit, it's around 4-5% deficit. It's better than before. Yeah. But still, we don't really see a very strong fiscal discipline on the side of government. So that is a lot of the concern for us, especially fiscal policy expert. You know, when economy is relatively good right now, probably BOJ should start to normalize it. But we are not really sure the government and, you know, people are ready for BOJ's normalization and how the BOJ is going to do with this huge holding, right? That is nobody is not clear about it.
You raise many, many interesting questions. Let me come back to two issues. One is that the very fundamental, how the BOJ can normalize if the inflation remains low, as you argued, and the BOJ has an inflation target of 2%. So will they just give up this inflation target and acknowledge that, sorry, we are not able to reach 2% inflation, we are happy with zero inflation, and therefore we start to normalize our monetary policy operations? Or would they say anything else?
Yeah, that's a very difficult issue. So Governor Kuroda, at this moment, he admit the underlying inflation is very weak, very far from 2%, he admitted. Then he say we will continue to do current massive monetary accommodation until we get to the 2%. But most of the people know, I'm pretty sure he also knows, it's difficult for us to get to the 2%. I mean, just underlining, excluding oil price or depreciation, it's very difficult to get it. But so in Japan, there is a discussion. So a lot of people say Bank of Japan should completely abandon this 2% target. Maybe it can adopt 1% target, because including oil and depreciation, imported price still possible to get to the 1%. So some people say either completely abandon it or adopt 1%. But usually in the Japanese media, I say that is not good idea. Because as you know, 2% inflation is like a global standard. And a lot of people know Abenomics and this massive monetary easing started, or the whole reason is to achieve 2%. If the Bank of Japan explicitly abandoning 2%, this will give a very bad signal to the market and also central banking circle. I think it's not a good idea. Yeah. And so I think my suggestion is introducing flexibility to 2% target, like plus minus 1% to the 2% target. And then maybe public will understand 1% is okay. And at the same time, government and then BOJ is not abandoning 2%. That flexibility is better. I think that is first thing they have to do before they take any clear, decisive step toward normalization.
But wouldn't be the just a communication trick saying we still want 2%, but we are also happy with plus minus one, so between 1 and 3. But markets will and people will see that yes, inflation has been remained low, maybe even lower than 1%. And if the Bank of Japan is not effective in achieving the target, that might seriously undermine its reputation.
That depends, because when you look at the global central bank, they are all becoming quite flexible. For example, in the case of Federal Reserve, it took like more than 6 years for them to get to the 2%. But they already took the, you know, normalization process even before their underlying inflation reached 2%. If we look at ECB, underlying inflation, core inflation is just 1%, but they are already making decisive step toward, you know, completing tapering by end of this year. So also Sweden Riksbank, they introduced this plus minus 1% to the 2% target last year. So globally, many central banks becoming more flexible. So, and at this moment, I think Bank of Japan have to explain, yes, it takes very difficult to get to the 2%, but at the same time, BOJ will continue to provide certain monetary accommodation. And what is important at this moment is Japan have a 6-year expansionary phase, not strong economic growth recovery, just about 1.3%, but still above the potential economic growth, reasonably good. And maybe Bank of Japan have to have some room for the additional monetary easing in the event of next crisis or next recession, which are possible in within next 2-3 years. That is more important, right? So we should be ready for that. So I think it's not a big surprise if the BOJ introduced flexibility to 2% target.
It's a very interesting comment that the BOJ may need additional monetary space to face the next crisis. But how can that be achieved? I mean, as you mentioned, the BOJ balance sheet is already 100% of GDP, yes, and it's growing. The interest rate is still negative. Mm-hmm. So how can from that position the BOJ have any additional monetary space to do a further monetary stimulus?
Yeah, so the additional space is very limited. But for example, we will have a consumption tax hike next October, and we will have an Tokyo Olympic Game 2020 summer. After that, many people expect there will be recession. So depend on how serious. If we really have a very serious recession, I think government and central bank have to come in and do everything they can do, right? So that is what I'm saying. So that depends on how serious this next recession will be. If it's not, you know, of course, BOJ already have a massive monetary easing. They don't need to. But in case something really seriously wrong things happen, then I think they will do everything to come in. Yeah. So magnitude, you know, space is not so big, but still better to do unwinding now to prepare for the future. That is better option.
Okay. Very interesting comment. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening to Bruegel Backstage, the Sound of Economics channel. And thank you very much to my guest, Sayuri Shirai, for joining us today and sharing your very interesting and stimulating thoughts with us. If you are interested in more of Bruegel's work, we have an array of blog posts and publications available at our website, www.bruegel.org. I hope you will join again soon. Until next time, bye-bye.